All right. Sorry that we were off the air for several days. Actually, we were on the air, but we were dealing with the departure of my dear godbrother, Bhattachur Maharaj. So now we'll continue with our Gita classes as scheduled. And let's see. Okay. What was I going to discuss before class? Yeah. So this is part of life, having to deal with devotees leaving the planet. And we have to be ready for these eventualities. And in this particular case, my primary concern was to help the devotees understand that by serving the spiritual master, after the spiritual master leaves the planet, they can remain connected. And then primarily, what was the mood of His Holiness Bhattachur Maharaj in service? Because service is our connection. We lament, of course, the departure of a great soul, but we continue to remain connected through seva, through service, as we are with Krishna, service in separation. Okay, so now we'll go on with the Bhagavad Gita, and first we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vadadhari, Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Vadadhari, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhuba Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhuba Kunja Bihari, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Padadhaguri, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Padadhaguri, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunya Vihari, Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunya Vihari, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parabhutacharya Osta Teta Satishi Shimad, His Divine Grace Savaya Chalanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada ISKCON, Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrind Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidvaita Gadadha Shivasi Gaur Bhakta Vrind Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopikopina Shayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Jagannathaswami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Shimati Vilasi Devi Kijai, Sampradaya Bhakta Vrind Kijai, Gaura Premananda, Hari Hari Gom. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani. Namaste, Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharni, Nipasesas Nivadi Paschata Dejatari. So Meganata Vedandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Minitam. Yena, Tosmai, Shigurave Namaha. So we offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while we were blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we're going to continue with our study of the Bhagavad Gita. We're on the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And as we know, there are 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And they are divided in groups of three. So if you know your mathematics, 3 times 6 is 18. Pretty good. So Prabhupada describes, and the acharyas describe, that the middle 6 chapters are like the super nectar part of the Bhagavad Gita. Because the whole Bhagavad Gita is nectar, I understand that. But the middle 6 chapters are really amazing because they're dealing with Krishna, directly with Krishna. And you'll see in the 7th chapter as we get into it. It's something like that old type of cookie that they used to have called an Oreo cookie that had the cream in the middle and the outside on the outside. And you bite into it and you really want to get to the cream, or with a sandwich, that you have the 2 pieces of bread, but really what's interesting is what's in between the 2 pieces of bread. The bread is just there to hold the nectar in. So, anyway, the whole Gita is nectar. I don't want to give you the impression that only the middle 6 chapters are, but let's get on with the Bhagavad Gita. So we're going to share a screen, and here we go. Text 3 in the 7th chapter. And this is another famous text that would be good to learn. So it goes as follows. Manushanam sahasresu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschan mam veti tatvataha. So, manushanam, of men, sahasreshu, out of many thousands, kascha, someone, yatati, endeavors, siddhaye, for perfection, yatatam, of those so endeavoring, api, indeed, siddhanam, of those who have achieved perfection, kascha, someone, mam, me, veti, does know, tatvataha, in fact. So, translation, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Wow, really rare. So, of course, we experience this out of so many people in America. Very few are thinking of spiritual perfection or understanding the purpose of life. You know, if you ask most people the purpose of life, they'll say, it's to make money, or eat, drink, and be merry, or to just like enjoy your senses until you die. You know, but basically they don't think about the purpose of life, or what perfection is, or what the psychologist Maslow called self-actualization. And of those who have achieved perfection, and then there's different types of perfection, you know, as we learned previously in the Gita, there's perfection of knowing yourself just to be spirit without knowing Krishna. There's the perfection of knowing that Krishna is in everyone's heart. There's the perfection of basically knowing this life is temporary. There's, you know, there's different types of perfect knowledge. However, it is very rare to know Krishna in truth. However, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada, we can know Krishna in truth. Wow, that's amazing. If you think about it, it's amazing. And Prabhupada, he never wanted to water down the Krishna conscious presentation in order to make more followers. Many people advise Prabhupada, you know, change the name of Hare Krishna movement. I was going to join that. And I was listening to some conversations Prabhupada had with the poet Allen Ginsberg. And Allen Ginsberg was saying, you know, you got to pick something, you know, that people in the West can relate to instead of Krishna. I should pick just Om. And there's no problem with Om, because Om is, in one sense, Krishna, Radha Krishna, the living entity. And Om is a sound that I guess people make just naturally. Om, like that. Om. Almost when they're sleeping and snoring, they make that sound. So he was making that, but Prabhupada insisted, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because the name Krishna is the most potent name of God. There's many names, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, but the name Krishna, that's it. That's the zinger. So, therefore, Prabhupada said, we are interested in presenting the truth, and if one person comes and accepts it, that is success. He said, it's less just like having one moon as compared to many little twinkling little stars. How we wonder what they are. So one moon can illuminate the whole world, or one sun can illuminate the whole world, but one star, all it does is twinkle. So, anyway, Prabhupada explains there are various grades of men, and out of many thousands, one may be sufficiently interested in transcendental realization to try to know what is the self, what is the body, and what is the absolute truth. Generally, mankind is simply engaged in the animal propensities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And hardly anyone is interested in transcendental knowledge. The first six chapters of the Gita are meant for those who are interested in transcendental knowledge and understanding the self, the super self, and the process of realization by Jnana Yoga, and the discrimination of the self or matter. However, Krishna can be known only by persons who are in Krishna consciousness. It's like a tautology. Other transcendentalists may achieve impersonal Brahman realization, for this is easier than understanding Krishna. Krishna is, of course, for me, it's easier to understand Krishna. I can't really understand. I mean, I can understand theoretically what Brahman realization is, but I'm really not attracted to it. It's just, it's like basically ending my existence. I want to have fun. Having fun is a natural propensity of the soul. So therefore, we want to have fun. Brahman realization is no fun. It's simply the end of all suffering, which is, you know, it's a step. But it's not fun. It's not fun. It's like your mother telling you, I'm going to stop spanking you, but you got to sit in the corner. That's Brahman realization. Krishna is the Supreme Person, but at the same time, he is beyond the knowledge of Brahman and Paramatma. The yogis and jnanis means people try to figure things out by their own little brains, are confused in their attempts to understand Krishna. Although the greatest of the impersonalists, Sripad Shankaracharya, has admitted in his Gita commentary that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his followers do not accept Krishna as such, for it is very difficult to know Krishna, even though one is transcendental realization of impersonal Brahman. Let me explain who Shankaracharya is. Okay. Once upon a time, many, many eons, millennia ago, that's over 2,000 years ago, people were engaged in misusing Vedic rituals, and it got degraded to the point that religious ceremonies meant eating meat and doing all sorts of abominable things in the name of religious ceremonies. Just like we have in America. In America, you can go to your church barbecue on Sunday. And they will tell you it's all right to eat the ribs of a pig or the ground up meat of a cow. It's all right. Why? They'll say, well, pigs and cows are not living entities, or they have no soul. Only human beings have a soul. And that's pretty crazy. Because you can see pigs and cows and all the animals have feelings. And that's a way that religion has been used to exploit not only other species, but even other members of the human species. Like you have this racism, and I hate to tell you, but in many cases, this racism was promulgated by religious institutions. Horrible. Not only by, you know, politicians and, you know, degraded people, but by so-called religious institutions. So the religious institutions become very degraded in Kali Yuga. So now, of course, you know, it's not politically correct to be racist, but people are still having those feelings because they don't understand the unity of all living entities, you know, Yastu Sarvani Bhutani. So that's a problem. And so over 2,000 years ago, they were running into similar problems. There was not only speciesism, you know, exploitation of animals and killing in the name of the Vedas, but there was racism in the names of the Vedas. What do I mean by racism? There was a hierarchy in the culture. And it was definitely racial, too, where those who were Brahmins could exploit economically, socially, those who were not Brahmins, especially, especially those who were members of the so-called lower castes. And this is a problem. And so there was a rebellion. And that rebellion took many forms. People were rejecting the Vedas, and there were different religions that were formed. One, of course, is the Jain religion. And then, at that particular time, this is over 2,000 years ago, Buddhism became prominent as a rebellion against what was going on in society. So in order to rebel, they had to reject the Vedas, because people were using the Vedas to justify animal killing, animal slaughter, racism, sexism, and God knows what other ism they were doing. So the whole society basically was rejecting the Vedas at that time. Some people just like headed for the forest. They just got out of the cities or got out of the towns because they couldn't stand it anymore. So, and others, they developed certain religions. They were more egalitarian, like Buddhism. And when Lord Buddha started Buddhism, he did not decry the existence of God. Although many Buddhists will tell you that, but if you analyze the original teachings of Lord Buddha, he never said that there was no God. He just said, we are not these external things, not this, not this. That's a type of jnana yoga. And he preached, as far as behavior, he preached what's called ahimsa, which means nonviolence. So stop the killing of the animals in the name of religion. So we need to do that too. You know, in the name of religion, in the name of freedom. You know, people want freedom. But freedom can never be absolute. You cannot intrude on the rights of others. People must understand. Just like this whole thing with wearing masks. People said, I have a freedom not to wear a mask. But you're intruding on someone else's right to life, basically. Yes, you have a freedom not to wear a mask at home, obviously. But if you don't wear a mask and someone gets hurt, you have a responsibility to protect others. Anyway, forget about the virus right now. So Lord Buddha appeared, and practically all of India became Buddhist at that particular point. So then, this we're leading up to this whole story of Shankaracharya, then Lord Shiva, who is the greatest devotee of Krishna, he appeared as Shankaracharya, and he took sannyas at a very early age. Some people say 8 years of age or 6 years of age, but very early. Very, very early he took sannyas. And he basically did or undid what some of the Buddhists did. That is, instead of criticizing the Vedas, he taught a slightly different variety of Buddhism in the name of the Vedas, because it was important to bring people back to the Vedas for the proper understanding. He brought them back one step, not totally, but one step towards the Vedas. And then you had other personalities, and that was his mission. He knew what he was doing, and he actually told his followers, Vaja Govinda, Vaja Govinda, Vaja Govinda, Mudamate. Just worship Krishna, just worship Krishna, worship Krishna. As I said, when you repeat something three times, that means it's important. So he told his followers to worship Krishna, but they didn't listen. They just like took up this philosophy, this covered Buddhism that he was teaching. Okay. And then you had other great teachers who were called Acharyas who appeared after Shankara, like Madhvacharya, Nimbarkacharya, Ramanujacharya, and brought people back fully to the personal understanding of the Vedic literatures. So that's the story of Shankaracharya. And his followers did not understand and do not understand what he was actually teaching or the reason he was teaching that. And they are very dry because they're just meditating, I am Brahman, aham Brahmasmi, tatvamasi, I am that it is. It's like in the Bible. When God appears as a burning bush, and Moses, who are you? What's your name? I tell them, I am that I am. And some people think that God's name is I am. Which is, it's really stupid. You know, God was actually saying, I am that absolute truth, obviously. Not that I am is my name. You know, someone says to me, are you a Bir Krishna Maharaj? What's your name? And I said, I am. And they say, oh, your name is I am. Kind of stupid. I am is not a name. I am comes before you say your name. I am whoever you are. I am spirit soul, actually. Or you're talking about your spiritual identity. Okay. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the primeval original, Lord Govinda Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karna Karnam. He's the cause of all causes. He's the origin of everything, the supreme controller, and he has a body made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. That's the translation. It is very difficult for the non-devotees to know him. Although non-devotees declare that the path of bhakti or devotional service is very easy, they cannot practice it. Now, why can't they practice it? Well, basically, they want to be Krishna, or they don't want to give up their little tiny plans or whatever. It's actually quite easy. You just chant Hare Krishna, and you follow a few simple rules and regulations. And what's so difficult about not eating meat or not taking intoxication? What's the difficulty? If the path of bhakti is so easy, as the non-devoted class of men proclaim, in other words, they say it's so easy, then why don't they take up the difficult? And why do they take up the difficult path, Prabhupada says? Actually, the path of bhakti is not easy. So-called path of bhakti practiced by unauthorized persons without knowledge of bhakti may be easy, but when it's practiced factually according to the rules and regulations, the speculative philosophers and scholars fall away from the path. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sutta, let me explain what Prabhupada means by it's not easy, because they have to give up their conception that they know what's best. These speculative philosophers, speculative scholars and philosophers. And you know, you definitely have to change some way in life, you know. You can't just go on eating meat. And you gotta change your diet, you gotta change certain aspects of your lifestyle. You don't have to change your clothes. You have to wear dhotis or saris or any of that other stuff. You don't have to wear a pigtail, man. But there's certain things you got to change. And these armchair or speculative scholars and philosophers, they don't want to change anything. Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra, Didim, Vina, Icon, Diki, Hadir, Bhaktir, Udpata, Yaiva, Kalpate, devotional service of the Lord that ignores the authorized literatures like the Vedic literature, like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Narada, Pancharatra, is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. In other words, if you make up your own process of Krishna consciousness, like instead of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, you decide to chant, make your own mantra. And many people make their own mantras up. And like, we're chanting Hare Krishna, and they think, well, I don't like Radharani, let me just chant Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Because you can't chant Rama either. Because Rama refers to several different things as a secret. Rama refers to Lord Ram. Rama refers to Krishna as the enjoyer. Rama refers to Lord Balaram. And the acharyas say Rama refers to Radha Raman. So you got Radharani there in the name. Rama. Radha Raman. Enjoy of Srimati Radharani. So, you can't make up your own mantra, you can't make up your own process. You know, people make up their own process. There's nothing to do with what our acharyas have taught, nothing to do, you know, that's your right. You can make up your own process, but you ain't going anywhere. There's a process for doing material things, and there's a process for doing spiritual things. It's not possible for a Brahman realizing personalist or the Paramatma realizing yogi to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yashoda or the charioteer of Arjuna. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused about Krishna. Muyanti yat suriha. Mam tu veda nakaschana. No one knows me as I am, the Lord says. And one does know him, then sa mahatma sudurlabha. Such a great soul is very rare. So it says the demigods, they don't know Krishna. And there's many evidences of that. For example, when Indra tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, got very upset that Krishna was disobeying his standard ritual, and Lord Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys, Lord Shiva at a particular point, even out of pastimes, began to fight with Krishna. When Krishna was fighting with his devotee Banasura. So many different instances of this. So how can we know Krishna if this is so rare? By the mercy of Krishna's devotee. That's the point. Mahajanayena Gathasatanta. One cannot understand things simply by reading the Vedas. Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto, and also Tago Prachishta. Shuti na, divina. So in other words, the Vedas are so multifarious, multi-branched, that you really won't understand what's the purpose of them unless you come in touch with a pure devotee who actually is in touch with Krishna. Therefore, unless one practices devotional service to the Lord, one cannot know Krishna as he is, and that's called tatvataha. That means, tatva means, we explained this before, the category of truth, something that doesn't change, his nature, ontological position would actually be, I think that's a pretty good definition of tattva, ontological position. You can look up that word, ontology, or ontology is the study of ontological positions. Even though one is a great scholar or philosopher, only the pure devotees can know something of the inconceivable qualities of Krishna. In other words, by Prabhupada's mercy, we can know something. We don't know everything. Krishna's unlimited. His being the cause of all causes, we know that. His omnipotence and opulence, we know that. His wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, renunciation, we know that he has all those things. Because Krishna is benevolently inclined to his devotees. In other words, he gives us this information. In the 10th chapter of the Gita, you have this verse, Tesham Satati Danam Bhajatam Pratipur Kam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upiyanti Te. To those who are devoted to me, I give them knowledge. I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So it's all love. If you love someone, then they open their heart to you. And if you don't, just the person. Why is he going to open his heart to you, rascal? If you don't like him, if you want to be with him, be like him, or be in opposition to him, or you're envious of him, why is Krishna going to tell you anything other than, go to HW? Yeah, well, not really. He'll say, we'll be patient, Get out of your illusion. Go to the mental institution, this material world. And eventually, after being many, many lifetimes in this mental institution, prison house, whatever, then come back to me. He is the last word in Brahman realization, and the devotees alone can realize him as he is. Therefore, it is said, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Navavekrayam Indriyai Seva Mukhehi Juhadu Swayamevasparachana. No one can understand Krishna as he is by the blunt material senses, because Krishna is spiritual. We spoke about this many times before. You can't perceive spirit with material senses. That's obviamente. But he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. So in other words, Krishna becomes so pleased with the devotees who chant and hear about him and do simple things for him. Krishna doesn't require money offerings or anything. He says, Patram pushpam phalam poya, yome bhakti prayachati. Just offer me something with love and devotion. And Krishna's pleased. I mean, even there's a story about devotees who love Krishna so much, and they were so much immersed in that loving ecstasy that when they were offering Krishna bananas, they gave him the banana peel instead of the bananas, because they were blind with love. And Krishna accepted. So it's not the quantity of what you offer, it's the quality by which you offer. Okay, now Krishna is going to describe the material energy in this particular verse, and the different categories of material energy. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kang mano bhutiya evacha ahankara iti amme vina prakritir ashtada. Bhumin Nehi, earth, apaha, water, analaha, fire, vayuhu, air, kam, ether, manaha, mind, budihi, intelligence, eva, certainly, cha, and ahankaraha, valsido, iti, thus, iyam, all these, may, my, vina, separated, prakritihi, energies, ashtada, eightfold. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together these eight constitute my separated material energies. We talked about this before when we were talking about Sankhya Yoga, how you analyze all these different elements. And in addition to analyzing the senses and their sense objects and the active senses and the perceptive senses, that's Sankhya Yoga. So in other words, what Krishna is saying, all these things are his energies. Everything you see here is Krishna's energy, like the sun and sunshine. The science of God analyzes the constitutional position of God and his diverse energies. That means many energies. Material nature is called prakriti, or the energy of the Lord in his different Purusha incarnations, as described in the Sattvata Tantra. So there's a little Sanskrit for you. Vinoshtu Trini Rupani Pushkayan Yato Vidhu Ikam Tu Mahata Shastriya Dvitiyam Twananda Sams Tatam Tritiyam Sarvabhuta Stam Tani Gyatva Vimuchyate. For material creation, Lord Krishna's plenary expansion assumes three Vishnus. The first one, I'll explain all this. Mahavishnu creates the total material energy known as the Mahatattva. The second, Garbhadakshayanch, Vishnu enters into all the universes to create diversities in each one of them. The third, Chiradaksha, Vishnu, is diffused as the all-pervading supersoul in all the universes and is known as Paramatma. He is present even within the atoms. Anyone who knows these three Vishnus can be liberated from material entanglement. So, as I explained before, Krishna appears in various avatars, in various expansions, and three of his expansions deal with the material world. There's the Mahavishnu who breathes out, and all from his body, all the seed-like universes come out, and then they expand and get bigger, 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 bigger. And then he enters into each and every universe as the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then he expands as the Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Shiradakshaya Vishnu is Krishna's expansion in everyone's heart. It's pretty simple. I mean, don't ask me how he does it, but it's pretty simple that he does it. The material world is a temporary manifestation of one of the energies of the Lord. That's a material energy. All the activities of the material world are directed by these three Vishnu expansions of Lord Krishna. And they're non-different from Krishna, but Krishna is able to do unlimited things simultaneously in unlimited places, and you know the whole thing. We've discussed that before. These Purushas, Purushas means persons or supreme controllers, are called incarnations. Generally, one who does not know the science of God Krishna assumes that this material world is for the enjoyment of the living entities, and that the living entities are the Purushas, the causes, controllers, and enjoyers of the material energy. Wow. That's pretty proud. According to Bhagavad Gita, this atheistic conclusion is false. In the verse under discussion, it is stated that Krishna is the original cause of the material manifestation. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this. The ingredients of the material manifestation are separated energies of the Lord. Even the Brahma Jyoti, which is the ultimate goal of the impersonalists, is a spiritual energy manifested in the spiritual sky. There are no spiritual diversities in the Brahma Jyoti as they are in the Vaikuntha Lokas. In other words, if you go to the Brahma Jyoti, that means the light coming out from Krishna, or the energy of Krishna, there's no activities, no expressions of individuality. And so the impersonalist accepts this Brahma Jyoti as the ultimate eternal goal. The Paramatma manifestation is also, that's the second expansion of Krishna. First one is Mahavishnu. That's the third manifestation, sorry, of Krishna. First one is Mahavishnu, then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then Paramatma, which is also called Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Paramatma manifestation is also a temporary, all-pervasive aspect of the Shiradakshaya Vishnu. The Paramatma manifestation is not eternal in the spiritual world. Therefore, the factual absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He is complete, the complete energetic person, and he possesses different separated and internal energies. So, in the spiritual world, there are different planets. I think we should get into this. However, the Paramatma manifestation, expansion of Krishna, is not there in the spiritual world, neither is Mahavishnu or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So according to the form that a devotee worships, and there are unlimited forms and unlimited locations, which are called lokas or planets in the spiritual world, one goes to a particular planet or location. And one example of this is something called Ayodhya. Ayodhya is the place of Lord Ram. And we have many devotees of Lord Ram. Lord Ram is non-different from Krishna, no difference, but acting differently in different circumstances for different purposes. So there are many devotees of Lord Ram, and if they're completely dedicated, they go to Ayodhya in the spiritual world and get a chance to be with Lord Ram eternally. And many of the followers, or some of the followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, were devotees of Lord Ram. And, of course, they also were devoted to Krishna, but their primary focus was Lord Ram. So they go back to the spiritual world and go to Lord Ram's place. It's like everybody has different tastes. You know, we all like different types of food. Even in the material world, we all like different countries. We all like different weather patterns. We like to hang out with different people, associate with different people. Of course, you know, the material world is obviously mundane. But in the spiritual realm, there's unlimited variety. And so basically, you can have whatever you want. It's like, there was actually a song, oh my God, from the 1960s that was called Alice's Restaurant. you can get anything you want in Alice's restaurant. So the point is, you can get anything you want in Krishna's restaurant. Some limited varieties of different expansions of Krishna. Because if Krishna didn't have unlimited varieties, it's described in the Bhagavatam, like the waves in the ocean, then how can you call him God? If he couldn't do unlimited things simultaneously in unlimited places, he wouldn't be God. He'd just be, you know, a real powerful yogi or something like that. I mean, just like when Krishna was on this planet over 5,000 years ago, in Dwaraka, which since then has gone under the water, and certain remnants of the city have been discovered by archaeologists and anthropologists. In Dwarka, Krishna had 16,108 wives. Phew! That is a tough one. So, but he's God. You know, people question, or have questioned Prabhupada, you know, how can Krishna have 16,108 wives? What are they doing? You know, all taking turns every year. You know, they get the chance 16,108 years or every day. You know, what's the system? Perhaps they want 16,108 wives. Well, they don't know what they're getting into. So anyway, so in each, so because God, you can do things simultaneously. So in each and every house, Krishna is doing something different within each and every one of his family, not just wives and the kids, playing with the kids, talking politics, watching CNN. No, got to stop myself from that one. Now Krishna's doing something different in each and every house. He's God. What do you expect? You expect him to be doing the same thing in every house, or only have one house and one wife? What's wrong with you? So Prabhupada would sometimes comment when people would say, how can God have 16,108 wives? Prabhupada said he only had 16,108 wives. That's nothing. He had millions of wives. He's in everyone's heart. He's maintaining everybody. So what's the problem with 16,108? So anyway, the point is that Krishna can do different things in different places, and all these different planets, all these different cool planets in the spiritual world. And the ultimate planet that we would all like to, or I would like to go to, is called Goloka Vrindavan, because that planet has the most intimate relationships with Krishna. On the other planets, you know, the relationship is loving, but it's more like a awe and reverent type of relationship. It's like, you know, you got some great personality, like the Beatles or something. Sorry. The 1960s, you know, everyone, oh, the Beatles, George. Even the devotees, when they went to the UK for the first time, were thinking, we got to meet with George. And they were praying to Krishna. Oh, how can we meet with George? Even one devotee wanted to see the Beatles so much, he went on the roof of the building in Apple Records, and there was a skylight. I think you all know what a skylight is. I mean, it's some sort of glass on the top of the building. And he fell through. And he ended up in the middle of whatever. So that's a reverent relationship. You know, when you see, oh, guess who's coming? Just like I was, one day I was in the UK, and the Queen was coming in her Rolls Royce. So everybody had a reverent relationship. They just, oh, here comes the Queen, Hari Bol. And I even got a chance to wave, went up to the car, waved to the Queen, and said, Hare Krishna. So, she didn't know I was an American, fortunately. So that's this general relationship that people have in the spiritual world. But in Goloka Vrindavan, it's not like that. It's not that, oh, Krishna, you're so great. No, it's a, oh, Krishna, let's go play with the cows already. You know, what are you doing? What are you doing with your girlfriends? You know, why don't you wasting your human form of life and come out and play with us and take care of the cows? So anyway, it's very joking, intimate relationship. Just like I was describing the other day, the relationship, and actually today, the relationship I had with Bhakti Chumaraj. I mean, his disciples, of course, had a very reverent relationship, but with me, it was just like buddies, you know, just run around and joke. And I remember one time amongst many of our God brothers, we had a mud wrestling competition in the Ganges River in Mayapur. Can you imagine that? Sannyasis, mud wrestling. I mean, what's happening with the Hare Krishna movement? So anyway, we were wrestling. Of course, you probably can guess who won. That was Jatataka Maharaj, because at that time he was extremely healthy. And I think he weighed about 300 pounds. So there was no question. I remember being trapped. And I survived. So anyway, that's the sort of thing we enjoy. We enjoy this close relationship and care and joking. That's the spiritual world. You know, people too serious. Like Prabhupada was, he would joke a lot. I mean, not as much as I do in class, but in private, Prabhupada would joke. And he would just tell all sorts of, you know, Bengali proverbs to his disciples who were with him. It was just, you know, this is the type of relationship we hanker for in this world, or in the spiritual world. So anyway, so the spiritual world is like that, like Loka Vrindavan is like that. So really, we want to go there. I want to go there. I don't want to go somewhere where there's just awe and reverence. I want to go where you really can just like let your hair down and get into it. So anyway, in the material energy, the principal manifestations are eight. That's mentioned in this verse, as above mentioned. Out of these, the first five manifestations, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, are called the five gigantic creations, or the gross creations, within which the five sense objects are included. In other words, the objects of our senses come from contact with these different elements, like smell, earth, taste, water, like that, sound and ether. So they are manifestations of physical sound, touch, form, taste, and smell, because you need these things. You're not going to smell without some particles in the air, which sure is earth. This is common sense. Material science comprises these 10 items and nothing more. So the five sense objects and the five, remember, 10 items are the five sense objects and the five elements, which are called Pancha Mahabhuta. That means five great elements. But the other three elements are items. Namely, right, intelligence and false ego. Mind. We mentioned what a mind was before. It's like the impulse to enjoy something, accept and reject. Intelligence means long-term vision. It's a very subtle thing. And false ego means I am the enjoyer. I am the proprietor. So this is real ego, but right now we're talking about material things. So false ego is that I am the center. I am the enjoyer. I am the proprietor. Me, 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 and me. So the other three items, mind, intelligence, false ego, are neglected by the materialists. In other words, materialists say that there's no mind, there's only a brain, there's no intelligence, and certainly there's no soul. You know, they don't, not aware of these three subtle elements or forces. You know, elements can also be forces. Philosophers who deal with mental activities are not perfect in knowledge because they do not know the ultimate source, Krishna. The false ego, I am, and it is mine, which I described before, which constitute the basic principle of material existence, includes 10 sense organs for material activities. What do you mean, 10 organs? Sense organs, the perceptive senses and the active senses. That was Sankhya we went into last chapter. Intelligence refers to the total material creation called the Mahatattva. Therefore, from the eight separated energies of the Lord are manifested 24 elements in the material world, which are the subject matter of Sankhya atheistic philosophies. So don't worry about it. We don't do that. They are originally offshoots from Krishna's energies and are separated from him. Now, the atheists, but another thing about Sankhya, it's very much connected with yoga. Like there's six what's called darshans in Vedic culture. And two of them we're dealing with now. Yoga and Sankhya. That's That's primarily why the sixth chapter is called Sankhya Yoga. Because Sankhya and Yoga are together. Sankhya means the analysis. It basically means counting, but realistically it means the analysis of all these different elements which you mentioned before. And yoga is the practice by which you can meditate and focus and think and control the mind so you can go through this whole analysis of the different elements. So it's on the subject matter of Sankhya, atheistic philosophy. There's Sankhya theistic and Sankhya atheistic, because it depends on the conclusion you come to. They are originally offshoots from Krishna's energies and are separated from him. But atheistic Sankhya philosophers with a poor fund of knowledge do not know Krishna as the cause of all causes. So in other words, there's theistic, and the theistic greatest person who presented theistic Sankhya is named Kapila Dev, and his instructions are there in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he goes through a really thorough analysis of this whole Sankhya process, as well as his analysis of devotional service, and as well as his analysis of the modes of nature and how the modes of nature even affect devotees. And sometimes devotees are under the modes of nature because they're not yet perfect, not yet very advanced in Krishna consciousness. And he discusses all the different manifestations of someone who is under the modes of material nature. So it's a quite complicated thing. And as we get to the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and you're welcome to read the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right now we're on the 10th canto. We're going to be there for a long time. And then you can actually start to understand Sankhya to a certain extent, but it's actually not possible right now unless you're extremely intelligent to come to the stage of self-realization by studying Sankhya. The subject matter for discussion in the Sankhya philosophy is only the manifestation of the external energy of Krishna. That's as it's being discussed right now, atheistic Sankhya philosophy, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, in the theistic philosophy, you get into more elements like the soul and the super soul. So you get actually into the marginal energy of the Lord, and you get into the Lord himself when you get into theistic Sankhya philosophy. But that is also very complicated. And the theistic Sankhya, as I mentioned before, is in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Kapila is an incarnation of God, and he is the son of Devahuti. A very beautiful story there. How he was born, how his parents got married, what his parents did before they had him as a son, and it would be very wonderful to read that story sometimes. There's so much in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So now, it is time to take questions. Hold on a second. Let me stop sharing the screen and unmute everybody. Second, allow participants to unmute themselves. You are now permitted to speak. So, who wants to speak? Questions? Okay, I hear someone in the background. Oh, alrighty. That's very nice, I see. I see Pranesha in India in the middle of the night. Okay, so what's the question?
Yeah, could you have like one side, this material world is full of misery, full of difficulty, full of problem.
Yeah.
Other side, we have a loving relationship with people and also loving relationship with Krishna. So it makes like contradict. One side it is like full of misery, and other side we have to have loving relationship. So how both are going simultaneously in this material world?
Ah, very nice. So let's talk about loving relationships while we're on it, on the subject matter. So there's different types of loving relationships. In the material realm, basically our love is based on the identification with the body, or the identification with the extended body, or the desire to enjoy ourselves subtly or grossly. So, which is a kind of, I hate to use the word selfish love. For example, let's say if I was not Krishna conscious, I'm not claiming to be. Let's say, all right, I love my mother very much because she's my mother. But your mother, actually, I do love your mother, but anyways, but if I was a material conscious, your mother, you know, who cares, you know? It's like if I hear some stranger on the street gets run over by a car, oh, very interesting story. So my question is that really love? Or because someone satisfies me, let's say I like a particular actor. Let's say find out some actor that I like. I can't even think. I mean, they're all dead now. Actually, they're all the actors because I haven't really watched too many films. Or let's say the actor who. Played Neo in The Matrix. So I really like him. Because he entertains me. I love him, or I love this particular singing group. You know, the Turtles or something like. They used to have a group called the Turtles. And the Turtles, the Monkeys. Can you imagine that? And now the names are worse, actually. They're actually much more degraded names. So, because they entertain me. Or let's say you're a young man and you just, you know, you just fall in love with some beautiful young girl because of the way she looks. I mean, look at, oh my God, I hate to mention his name again. I mean, look at the, oh, I hate to mention his name. Anyway, look at the President of the United States. I'm not going to mention his name. You know, he has a trophy wife. It's not that he loves her. I mean, come on. Come on. You know, probably doesn't even love himself. I mean, we'll just think of that. I mean, actually, people don't even love themselves because they don't know themselves to love themselves. So, because they want to use someone for their satisfaction. You know, that's exactly what I call trophy wife. Like that. So, if we talk about love, we have to understand what love is. And my experience is that until you love Krishna, really, it's really hard to have real love. I mean, although the love of a mother for a child is really intense and everything like that, I understand that. But it's based on her child, not all children. You know, it's a good example of what love is. All right. It's the closest thing, Prabhupada said, to love in this world. But really, it's my child, you know, not your child's, mine. It's still based on my and mine. So when you love Krishna, you can actually experience real love because then you can love everybody. Not because of what they do for you. You know, generally, we love someone because of what they do for us, and we hate someone because of what they do to us. As they say, the golden rule is do unto others as you would before others do unto you. That's a joke. Do unto others before do others. So when you come to the point of loving all living entities, and it's the highest stage, I know. I got chastised today by Mother Irmala telling me that I shouldn't try to push everybody to the highest stage, you know, just be compassionate. Anyway, so. And Champaka's laughing. So you have to be more compassionate. So you have to be more empathic. So anyway, getting back to the point. This is my psychology session. So getting back to the point is that when you actually can love and feel compassion for all living entities, and you see Prabhupada, in Prabhupada's pastime, you see Prabhupada having compassion for a bug. I mean, Prabhupada was not a racist, he was not a sexist, he was not even a humanist, you know. He was open to everybody, loving all living entities. And so that's really love. Okay, so we're talking about love. So anyway, you were asking, yeah, we have love. And yes, and of course, obviously in our relationships, you should love your wife. I'm not being so harsh. You should love your wife, you should love your children. And not just say to your poor wife that I love all living entities and you are the same to me as a cockroach. I love you as much as I love the cockroach. That marriage will last roughly 2 minutes. So you gotta be practical. I mean, there's actually a level of practicality devotees have to function on too. But I'm speaking theoretically. So yes, we do love people, we do love other devotees, that's right. But the more we love Krishna, the more we'll love each other in all these other relationships, whether it's a marriage relationship, whether it's whether you have a pet relationship, whether you have a child relationship, whether you have a friendship relationship. These things exist in this world. But if they're centered on Krishna, that love for that other person becomes more intense. And that's a positive side of this world. Who said everything is negative? And also there's a positive side in this world, that this world is an ideal opportunity to serve Krishna and help people. And like, for example, many people join or become EMT people. EMT means, emergency medical technicians, because they want to help people. I mean, obviously there's so much misery when you're an EMT, right? But there's also the ecstasy of extending yourself for other people. So it is mixed in this world. It is mixed. I mean, it's not just misery. And from the spiritual platform, Vishwam Purna Shukayate, it's blissful. And even when you're experiencing separation, I mean, of course, this is a very high level, and I'll probably get chastised for this one again. So it's a very high level, like even when you're feeling separation from your god brother who's passed away, then you feel more connected. So there's a certain ecstasy in that too. But that's spiritual. In the spiritual realm, even when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, let's use that example. When Krishna leaves Vrindavan and the gopis and the other residents of Vrindavan are hankering to be with Krishna, they're experiencing ecstasy. I mean, it's hard to imagine how they're experiencing, because in the material world, the separation is not an ecstatic symptom. Like if we lose someone, it's not ecstasy. But in the material world, it's not ecstasy. But in the spiritual realm, there's always connection. Like if you say the word Krishna, you're with Krishna, and you're feeling separation from Krishna, Krishna becomes fully manifest for you. So yes, it's mixed in the material world. Whoever said it was just misery? It's sukha dukkha. Agamai parino mitashtam satikshashir bhavata. But the sukha, or the happiness, the one experiences in this world is insignificant to the experience that one can have in the spiritual plane and spiritual relationships. It's just insignificant. Lord Chaitanya gave the example that sometimes a happiness in this world is like the temporary relief from misery. I mean, just like, for example, it's really hot. The thing I experience now, it's really hot here in North Carolina. Of course, in India, it's probably super hot. It's probably like hot enough to cook with if you go outside during the day. Only mad dogs and Englishmen go out during the day. So one thing I experience now is when I got a glass of cold water, it's really, wow, it's like ecstasy. But for those of you who are in New Zealand, when you got some hot tea, it's probably ecstasy. Like I see Radha Padma there, all bundled up, like shivering. And when is this all going to be over? With her ski hat on and everything like that. And she's in her house, too. Can you imagine you're in your house and you're freezing to death? So, you know, and I'm in my house and I have an air conditioner and everything like that. So I'm comfortable in this material world. I think I am. So, but the same thing that was pleasant becomes unpleasant in different circumstances. Like for example, when it was springtime here, and the weather was cool, and the swimming pool was really cool, really cold. It was like, I remember the first time I went in the swimming pool, one of our good neighbors has a swimming pool. It was like, when I inaugurated, they wanted me to inaugurate it. So it was, I think it must have been like 40 degrees or something like that. So I went in and just, oh my God, and I jumped out. But now I go in and it's like going back to Godhead to go swimming. Because you're just like, whew, relief. So that's material happiness right there. It just changes, you know, the same thing. Or, you know, let's take it in some sort of loving relationship. You're love, you see the person, and just when you see them, you feel like, oh, so great. And then when that turns to bitterness, that relationship, you don't want to see their face anymore. And then the same person becomes a source of like anxiety and distress. So anyway, so thank you for asking me about love. It's a very good question. All you need is love, love, as the Beatles said. So actually we have a request from Veda Priya. So, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. This on the same topic of love. If when we're Christian conscious, we're loving everyone, how do you have specific, like, close relationships with people, and, like, what are those based off of? If it's not,
okay.
How they serve you or please you.
Yeah, so that's actually a very good question. Although we may love everybody, we may not be able to have a close relationship with everybody. Because people have to have a similar mood. Even in the spiritual world, we may not have a close relationship with everybody because they may be in a different planet in the spiritual world, but we certainly love them. Or different incarnations of the Lord. So we may not be able to actually have that close relationship. Close relationships are based mainly on mutual interests. That's apart from love. I mean, the other day, there was an ant in my house. And by accident, I was walking back and forth. I didn't see him. I stepped on him and then he was experiencing pain. And I was actually experiencing some love for that and feeling compassion for that ant that was experiencing pain. However, I do not have a very close relationship with that ant. It has to be based on mutual interests. I mean, even amongst devotees, we all have different interests in life. I mean, some devotees are philosophical, some devotees are gardeners, some devotees like to cook, some devotees like to sew. Close relationships have to be based on mutual interests. But the love should be for everybody, or compassion should be for everybody. And that's, of course, that's a very high stage. And as I said before, I got warned not to push everybody to a high stage of devotional service. Don't preach so much to a high stage, so I traumatized. Anyway, so it's funny. Not really. I didn't get traumatized by it. It's just a very humorous relationship I have with this one devotee. So that's a high stage. But in the meantime, we should actually think, you know, that if we feel any animosity towards someone, that's not really pleasing to Krishna. You know, a devotee is someone who has no enemies. So if we feel any hate in our hearts to towards someone. That means we got to work on ourselves. Because as we were speaking earlier today, society will not change unless people have mutual love for each other. And that can only be had on the spiritual platform, to see beyond the body. Otherwise, just like the present, here we go again, politics. So the present situation, you have people thinking in the government that people think we have to exclude people from other nationalities because they're not Americans. You know, what is this? I mean, we're all at least humans. Like if one person suffers, we all suffer. That's how we should feel. Not just, you know, if someone in Africa suffers, you know, that's just Africa that's supposed to happen. Or Mexico, whatever. You know, this whole consciousness of nationalism, Prabhupada actually spoke against that. He actually said that, you know, if some countries have more land, they should let people come to grow things on their property, on the land of the country. So this whole concept, you know, just like nationalism, speciesism, sexism, racism, the only way to overcome that is this concept of universal love. And you don't have to wait till you become a pure devotee to experience it. It's simply a little bit of chanting Hare Krishna, and then your eyes start to open and you just see that, you know, these are our brothers and sisters. Like I'm, you know, right now we're doing some construction at the temple, and there's so many people of different races and nationalities doing construction. And I love them all. I mean, and they relate to me because I feel they're all like my brothers and sisters, whatever. It's nice. I like talking to them. I mean, they're not devotees. Some of them are smoking cigarettes. Some of them get drunk or do whatever it is on the holiday, 4th of July holiday. Some of them haven't shown up yet to work. But still, you know, I don't hate them. I hate the sin, the thing that's causing them pain. That's what Jesus Christ said. We hate the activity that's causing people pain. And we can come to that stage by Krishna consciousness quite easily. That's not like a super elevated stage where you see Krishna dancing everywhere. It's a stage where you, basically it's a basic stage in Krishna consciousness. So to me, that's the only way the world will become a better place, if we actually see like that. And of course, the animals do, you know, whatever. Thank you, Veda. Very nice question. Okay, so Veda is on Mother Tulsi's page right now. Mother Tulsi is one of the old people here. Really old. So anyway, so I think we have to end now. Those are good questions. And tomorrow night we're going to be same time, same station. And tomorrow morning I'm giving Bhagavatam class at 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning, East Coast time. That is 8:30 in the evening, Australia time, 10:30 in the evening, New Zealand, Fiji time, and Nidalee-Kant will be up at that particular time, as it usually is. But anyway, we're going to be giving class from Srimad Bhagavatam tomorrow morning, which is the evening of the same day. And tomorrow here is the same day you're experiencing New Zealand today. Tomorrow here is Wednesday, and New Zealand is also Wednesday morning. Right? It's true. So, anyway, and I got a hint from Arjuna today, one of my disciples, how to post the time for everybody in an easy fashion so I don't have to strain my poor little brain to figure it out. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.